This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Monday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And it is August 10th already. Holy crimoly, where is the summer going?
Oh, summer is quickly coming to its conclusion.
I'm already seeing, you know, back to school. I think in some schools in the Midwest, they're already back at school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are places that are already beginning school. I believe even places like Arizona are if they're not back to school, they're getting back to school. And I remember years ago, I was talking to somebody, I'm like, why start so early in August in Arizona? And they said, well, look at it this way. Where better to be on a 110 or 115 degree day than an air conditioned classroom?
I guess. I don't know. I think it's weird. I always remember it was after Labor Day. It was the week after Labor Day that seemed to be. And then you'd get your new, you know, from the Sears catalog, because I lived in rural New Hampshire, and you had to order your clothes from the Sears catalog and wait for them to come in. And then you would get those stupid tough skins that were like stiff as a board, and you had to like bend them and make them soft. Oh, gosh. Oh, those were the days.
Well, it was for me, it would be get to the age where I get sent out to, you know, to the mall to get my own clothes.
Oh,
and then as a teenage boy, I'd bring them home and my mom would see them and we'd return half of them.
Why? What was so offensive about them?
Well, you know, those early 90s, there was this brand out there called Big Johnson T-shirts.
Okay.
Do you remember those?
No.
It had a double entendre, let's put it that way.
Got it.
And a few others that I got to return over the years.
See, in high school for me was like, what was it? Jordache jeans. I mean, my gosh, guest jeans. Ha ha. Anyway, yeah, so great weekend. We had a great time at the fair. That was awesome. Mm-hmm. I love that. Did you end up getting a corn dog?
I did. It was delicious. Since I was there, through dinner time, I also got me some chicken poppers and everything else.
You got that while I was still there, mm-hmm. and I got that was delicious. That garlicky sauce on it. Oh man, that was good.
Oh yeah, no, there's some great great chicken places around. These ones were from iWings. They had their food cart out there, so yeah, kudos iWings on providing some delicious food.
And they're down out by
food.
The airport. Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. their brick and mortar is down by the airport. Then of course Jake broadcast for 2 hours on Friday too, so I wasn't there for that, but I'm sure that went well.
Yeah, that was Jeff and Jake were out at the fairgrounds. He had some great interviews. I was sitting in the studio listening the whole time, making sure those guys got on the air. So yeah, they had a lot of fun out there. Got to interview, I believe, a rodeo princess and some other young people that had plenty of great things to say. So.
Well, while all you guys were doing that, I was at the coast. While it was 90-some degrees in Salem, it was 65 and cool and yummy at the coast. We went to Depot Bay. And then, of course, so our favorite restaurant on the coast really is Nana's Irish Pub in Nye Beach. So I got my shepherd's pie fix, my snake bite fix, and my scotch egg. And snake bite is Guinness and hard cider. Mm-hmm. Delicious. It was like... Oh, Oregon coast, I've missed you.
Yeah, no, there is something definite to so nice about, especially the Oregon coast, on a 65 degree with the sun's out.
Yeah.
I am just going, I don't think there's anything better. And you know, we all get so used to either, you know, a fog or the clouds or, you know, a little too cold or whatever. And I'm going, but this is what Oregon is really all about right there, is that coastline.
Exactly. And it is wonderful. And Depot Bay, it actually was a little, it was that Oregon gray, that gray. And then when we went over to Newport, it all cleared up and it was like beautiful, which is always deceptive because that's how I always get bad sunburns if you're not paying attention, because the air's cool, but that sun is beating down on you. also, this weekend, we went to a friend's wedding in West Salem. We had Carrie and Solomon on last week to talk about their new book, and I went to their wedding over the week, and it was just a beautiful wedding, absolutely lovely. Got to see a lot of really great old friends from back in the ORP days. It was wonderful. I'm so happy for them, and it was a beautiful thing, and it was lovely. And of course, Solomon is a very gifted violinist, and his brother is a concert pianist. So the music was wonderful. All in all, it was just I was just delighted to share that day with them.
So congratulations to Solomon. And I just sit here and I'm kind of going, did they mention, because we were on the air, did they mention the book writing during their vows as being that, you know, that lock in, and there's never going to break anything up because they've written a book together.
No, but Solomon did promise in his vows to watch chick flicks with Carrie.
Oh, there it is. So he's making the ultimate sacrifice.
He is. So that was funny. And that got a good laugh. So all in all, it was a lovely afternoon. And again, we're just delighted to be there to share that day with them. Lots of news going on. I kind of went off grid a little bit this weekend. It was kind of nice to not be so connected. Mm-hmm. But then of course, you know, you're back into it. Of course, seeing stuff with Sophie Cunningham and, more talk of data centers in Salem. I got to talk about this though, because we have been following the WNBA. This cracked me up. Former NBA star Enes Kanter-Freedom has declared himself a WNBA prospect, says he meets every requirement necessary. And by the WNBA's own rules, he sure does.
Mm-hmm. So I noticed this story in action. Now there is a second player who has declared him herself available for the WNBA draft. He was a former first round pick, I believe, in the early 2000s. So he's in his mid to late 30s. But he only played a handful of games.
Royce White. Yeah.
I've heard there might be one other one that's doing the same thing. And the WNBA's response was very interesting because it, you know, they pretty much put out a we're not going to be political pawns. And a lot of people are saying,
too late.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's like, he's not making you the pawns. You made yourselves the pawns. And he's just pointing it out. And somebody brought up, I watched actually a little video where they were talking about the collective bargaining agreement between the Players Union and the WNBA. And they point out that it says women, you know, are eligible to play in this league, but it defines everything else you can possibly imagine that might have to do with sports and finance and things like that. Every other term, but the term woman was never once defined in there. So that's why they've commissioned a crew to figure out exactly what a woman is.
God, this is so peak 2026, I swear. And then the coach from the Fever can't define. She's not educated enough to define what a woman is, or what a woman is. And so they just can't figure this out. So they have made themselves political pawns. And I love this. And I think we talked a little bit about Clay Travis and OutKick, what they were doing with the $10 million and the boys team. And this some news talking head from some Midwest station completely missing the point. It's like, here's the point, flew right over her head. It's like, they're trying to actually protect women's sports, and these people want to let men in, and they think they're on the right side of this. But of course, the best way to do this is to take their arguments to their logical conclusion. And it's like, everyone knows, nobody believes that Enes Kanter-Freedom is a woman, or Royce White is a woman, or anybody else who throws on a dress, slaps on some lipstick and a wig is a woman. Nobody, even the people that are out there beating the drum on this, they don't even believe it. So I love that this is happening. I think this is the best way to challenge this nonsense, is to just come right out, mock it, frankly, and then make them take it to its logical conclusion. So they're going to have to deal with this.
Well, and that's the thing, is from Kanter's camp, And Enes Kanter-Freedom, he is actually a former Portland Trailblazer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He is, yes. He has been out of the NBA since 2022, released. But prior to his release, he made a number of statements in regards to LeBron James and the NBA's relationship with China. And they didn't like that. He's kind of been blackballed. You know, you could call it collusion if you want. But he's no longer in the NBA. But pointing this out, I sit here and go, there's only a few options here now on the table for the WNBA. It's either you define what a woman is and you live by that ruling and tick off whoever you think is your audience, because that's who they truly believe is their audience.
Yeah.
Or you open the door for him to be drafted and allow him to play at 6'10", 250 plus pounds.
Yep.
He will be the biggest, most dominant figure. He'll be the Shaq of the WNBA. Or you open your door up to the collusion charges. You don't draft him. Now you're a bigot because you didn't draft a trans player or declared trans player wanting to play in this league.
That's all it takes.
And if all these teams collude not to draft him, now you're opening the door to a massive collusion lawsuit. So they've really backed themselves into a corner, and they have to make a decision.
Yeah, they do. And I think this is good. I'm happy to see this. Let's go ahead and take a break. And then I want to come back and talk about Sophie Cunningham again as well. And the coach again and all that baloney and malarkey, to quote Joe Biden. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Miller's Barbecue and Catering.
Alrighty, real quick before I forget, just to mention, save the date. just heard from Bill O'Reilly's publicist this morning. He's got a new book coming out, which I'm very excited about. So we'll be chatting with him on September 23rd. That's a Wednesday. So you'll want to definitely tune in for that. I always love chatting with Bill.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people think, oh, he's just so gruff. He's just one of the nicest, kindest men. And his books are amazingly readable. They're just great.
Well, and it's great for us to be able to talk to him because he does have those Oregon ties. He started his career up here. So he knows a lot of what we are talking about here. The local level.
Oh, yeah.
Because these were issues popping up, 20, 30 years ago?
Oh, yeah. His new book is called Confronting America, What Has to Change. So, it's going to be good.
And if you were listening to Todd Starnes' show this morning, his book releases tomorrow. So I believe we've got time to talk to Todd Starnes here in the next week or two.
We're going to talk to Todd next Monday.
Mm-hmm.
We got him booked up. So it's been a while since we've had a little chat with our friend Todd. So that'll be great as well. Lots of books to read. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with that. That's good. Okay, so back to the WNBA. Again, I have never cared about the WNBA. Never. No. It's not on my radar. I don't give two poops about it. I never have.
Well, I just go.
But now it's like, good grief, girls.
Well, it's everywhere, and not because of the play on the court. And that's the saddest part of all of this is if you go back over the history, because it's been around for 20 some odd years now.
Yeah.
Where it's always been funded at the NBA level. The WNBA has never made money.
Right.
It played. I mean, we had a team in Portland many years ago that folded, and now we have a new team in Portland. Same team, just re-up for this year, kind of a thing. And it's had its ups and downs. And I've seen opportunities over the years. Sabrina Ionescu coming out of the University of Oregon in 2020, I think, could have been a huge difference maker if it hadn't been for COVID. Ending the Ducks' run at a national championship that year, I think pretty much put a massive slowdown. She's playing in New York now, I believe. But they've had kind of opportunities. They've had some great players come through the league over the years. But it wasn't until Caitlin Clark joined the WNBA and got the eyeballs on there for one on the court. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of have been seeing the pettiness and the things and the derogatory and the propping up and this and that. And now they've reached a new height because the most well-known players on a WNBA court are social media people at this point now.
Right, right. And so over the weekend, Sophie Cunningham got clotheslined, and you saw the move, and it's like, holy crap, that can't have felt good. And then her own coach during a press conference stood up for the chick that clotheslined her and didn't stand up for her own player.
Mm-hmm.
What is up with that?
Well, I just sit here and I go, if you look at there's a lot of videos of Dejanay Carrington, I believe is her last name.
Dejanay
or something like that. doing similar plays to this, where if it's a shorter player, she's had some success. There's other videos of her doing this exact same move on players where they're getting smacked across the head, where she wasn't ejected from the game. There's one video of her going up, I believe it was for a rebound, and grabbed the girl's hair in front of her and pulled her down by the hair. And there's been a few pundits out there that actually follow the WNBA who said her play, that kind of a play, needs to be put in check by the league because eventually she's going to hurt somebody. So it happened to be Sophie Cunningham, who is right now the most recognizable woman in the WNBA because of her statements, which, when you see them in the news, it's like she's this massive Riley Gaines level advocate. And I'm going, I'd never once seen her get that level. She's been more along the lines of, this is how I feel about things, and I stand by my words.
Yeah. Wow. That's just radical.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm reading an article over at redstate.com. Instead of checking or taking Carrington to task for her violent, because it was violent. I saw it.
Yeah.
The coach defended her. The coach on Sophie's team defended her, saying it was a hard foul, and she didn't think Carrington intentionally went for Cunningham's neck.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, didn't they foul Cunningham over that?
No, they didn't.
Carrington.
No. No, Cunningham didn't get a foul for that one. She got the free throw. So she made the basket.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But what it was is they call it a flagrant two foul, which is if you get a flagrant two foul, which is to protect things like smacking somebody hard across the head and neck, which, you know, flagrant two is literally if you are causing a potential career-ending injury, if the potential is there, you are ejected from the game.
Yeah.
So, of course, they made the right call. They ejected her. And then she went in the locker room while the game was still going on and tweeted out white privilege and tagged the Indiana Fever in it.
Good grief. Good grief. What talk? I mean, you know, you always talk about sportsmanship and setting examples for young girls. I mean, this is shameful. And then the coach, again, I mean, had two opportunities here to defend her players. And she just biffed on both of them and didn't do anything. So now the call out there in social media land is for either her to resign or for her to be fired. Because I think as a coach, you should back your players.
Well, the fact that she has a long history of not protecting Caitlin Clark. She has a long history of pretty much, I mean, like we said in the first segment, she can't even tell you what a woman is.
Right.
I'm just sitting here going, that's not leadership. She needs to go. And then there's a lot of calls for a long-term suspension for Carrington for this behavior, mm-hmm. which on the basketball, the sports side of things, I think more than a one-game suspension is probably necessary. I don't know if it needs mm-hmm. to carry out, but the fact that she showed her racist side and made this a race issue on her part.
Right.
There needs to be further punishment because now the league is forced to respond to a race issue at this point because of her behavior.
Because of her tweet, because of her tweet, you know, something's got to change. I mean, this just seems to be escalating. And right now the coach would have been a great opportunity for de-escalation and to kind of calm things down a little bit because it's getting ugly. Someone is going to get really quite hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ridiculous. And again, I never cared about the WNBA. Now they're everywhere and I can't get away from them.
So and that's the thing is there's every bit of extreme in this. And Sophie Cunningham, to her credit, she said, I have been involved in similar plays. Things happen on the basketball court.
Right, right.
And really went for the forgiveness side of it is I was ejected from games where I did this, you know, something similar. She didn't actually close on anybody. She actually grabbed another player kind of by the shoulders and kept her from going up for the shot.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, I got ejected and I deserve to get ejected.
Right, right.
You know, there's no privilege to it. There's no controversy. And I just sit here, I think somebody in Florida pointed out a DA somewhere said this would never happen in Florida because it's an athletic contest doesn't make assault okay. And they would have gotten the law involved.
Well, and that's what this is. Mm-hmm. That's what this is. That's what it was when the other one in that other game came down on Caitlin Clark's neck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of hard to, you look at that and you go, that doesn't look accidental. That looks kind of intentional here. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Yep. And that's the challenge I have is things that are going on in the WNBA today have been pointed out by numerous people at the level, at the league level, at the broadcasting level, as this needs to be nipped in the bud today before it gets worse. And the WNBA has no background. The commissioner should step down with the Indiana Fever coach at this point because showing no backbone and holding your players responsible for things that, you know, if are allowed to happen or going to escalate, they're escalating. It's happening today because of a lack of leadership at the league level.
Yeah, absolutely. And then watching that press conference where she kind of threw her player under the bus, you see Caitlin Clark and another player. I mean, it looks like a hostage video. They're kind of like hiding their heads and they look very dejected. And it's like, something's got to give here because.
At this point for players like that, it's like you don't even want to be in these post-game press conferences. No. There's no winning because nobody in there is asking a single question about the game and your play on the court. Their only focus now is on the drama that is surrounding everything going on WNBA. So why as a player would you want to be there? Because you can't say the right thing. Period. End of story.
Yeah, yeah. And I get we talked about Caitlin Clark kind of not really stepping up and not saying anything and, you know, okay, Republicans buy sneakers too kind of thing. And I think most of her core audience, obviously she's from Iowa, so that's, you know, middle of the country. Maybe she's wise to stay out of politics, but it's coming to a point where it's like, maybe, I don't know. I find it's just disappointing. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I like with with the Clay Travis and the Outkick offer. Again, it's just a lot of this, the absurdity of it all, not even being able to define what a woman is. I mean, come on, come on.
Well, it's going to be an interesting off season as, like we said, the WNBA has commissioned a group to figure out what a woman is and how this is all going to work. But at the same time, I'm kind of going, Sophie Cunningham's contract comes at the end of this year. And I could see a collusion amongst the teams to not sign her under the guise of she creates controversy of what we're doing. And if that's the case, I would say to Sophie and I would say to Caitlin Clark and I would say to anyone else that doesn't want to be involved in the drama of the WNBA and wants to just play basketball, find an alternative.
What alternatives are there? I mean,
well,
I mean,
Europe. There's European leagues out there. Of course, we know for a fact that some of those allow men to play in women's sports.
Well, there's the 6 foot something guy with long hair that calls himself Julia or something. Mm-hmm. He's actually Julian, but
there's options like Ice Cube. I know made an offer for his 3-on-3 basketball for Caitlin Clark and a nice substantial offer. It's like wherever Caitlin Clark and Sophie Cunningham decide to do, that is where the money is going to follow.
Yeah.
The money is not going to stick with the WNBA. No one will care to watch it ever again if these players leave.
No. And you see that in the stands whenever those two are there, the stands, it's full. And it's usually not full for WNBA games. Well, it just isn't.
And Chicago's ticked off because a Sophie chant broke out after that play. You have to find someone that's willing to post the video a few minutes after it all kind of happened because they started chanting Sophie in Chicago.
Oopsie. All right, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Greenacres Landscape and GA at Home.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Okay, data centers, still a big hot topic, big, big hot topic. It was last week's meeting that you saw the video of the little street thugs out there trying to intimidate the police and people that were there trying to testify one way or the other. You've got a lot of people that just haven't landed anywhere like us. Still, want to know more, see the pros, see the cons, see all of it. But you can't have, if you got a bunch of blue-haired patchouli nose rings in your face screaming at you, you can't have that conversation, apparently, in Salem.
Oh, no, they're not welcoming conversations and willing to go into them with open minds at this point.
No, not at all. So Varis, Salem Business Journal is reporting that Varis head of energy, Jeff Bladen, took questions from Salem business leaders on August 6th. About the proposed Oak Line at Mill Creek, the Mill Creek Data Center. Asked whether officials could tour finished campus, he said none exists yet. There isn't one. Asked about noise, he pointed residents to the city's posted plans. A water limit, the company says it will put in writing, has not yet been set. Again, nothing's been decided here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is very early in the planning stages. These are all discussions that need to be looked at, understand the technological capabilities that would be put in place in kind of learning about what this would actually look like. And instead of willing to have those conversations, we're getting people kicking and screaming about an NDA and, data centers are bad.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the comments on the post and it's kind of a little bit mixed. The richest people in Salem like this post. Oh, please, lady. Business owners are not, just because you own a business doesn't mean you're richest people
in
Salem.
Let's put it this way. Those are the people that are hiring the people that aren't the richest people in Salem.
Yeah. When did you get a job from a poor person? Let me know that. Yeah. So I think this is good. A lot of people are just dead set against it. I mean, you've got some people that have just made up their minds and there's no shaking them. A lot of the information out there is, I want to talk about misinformation. I mean, it's, a lot of it is flat out lies. Again, I have everybody, I have concerns about water as well. We have concerns, mm-hmm. especially with the drawdown of Detroit and the lake. But you know, if you want to, you know, open up your mind a little bit to just, you know, ask the questions and then let them answer you. If you don't like the answers, fine, but at least give them a chance to provide answers.
Well, here's the one side I love is, yes, we all have concerns about the water consumption, about the electric grid and those kinds of things. Yes. None of these people had any issues with our electric grid when they're, you know, sitting there going buy an electric car.
Right.
You know, where was the concern for your electric grid at that point? None.
None. And a lot of people, you know, no data centers, period. End of discussion. Well, who the hell are you to say that, lady? Mm-hmm. I mean, these people think it's kind of like the people that were testifying. You need to run all this by us. Mm-hmm. That's not how this works. You elect these people to represent you. And then it's also, it was on the city, not the city council. And it's just been mind-bogglingly frustrating to hear this. And then to see all the DSA people coming out, because mm-hmm. they're using this issue big time.
Well, I'm sitting there going, what would your option be? Should we clear cut a big chunk of Eastern Oregon and maybe just put data centers all out there and watch them burn every year when we're not taking care of our forests? Would that be a better option for you? Where's your logic behind any of this? You need the data centers. The machines that you're tweeting these out on run on those data centers. Yeah. We've gone away from the control all of your information on a hard drive at your home. We are now, everything's in the cloud, and these people don't seem to know what clouds are besides that puffy thing in the sky.
Right. That's my cloud over there. All my data's up there. See it? Mm-hmm. There's another comment on here, too. Unbelievable. They only appear before a pro-business group like the Chamber. No, they tried to come before council, and all y'all intimidated them and threatened them and chased them away.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? It's on video.
Well, and that's the irony of this. Yeah. They went and talked to the pro-business community. Why? Because they wanted to hear what they had to say.
Exactly.
You know, when they try and come talk to you and you don't want to hear what they have to say, what's the point of coming to talk to you?
Yeah, it's you guys are your own worst enemies. So anyway, I'm still out on it. I think when we had TJ Sullivan on last Monday, and he was talking about how this really isn't stopping anything. They did put a moratorium, but all the arrangements happened before. I think it was July 31st, and it happens after August, blah, blah, blah. That's not a part of this. And then basically saying they really didn't accomplish anything when the governor stepped in. She took that piece of property off the table, but that was the better location. Now it has the potential to move even closer to where the people are.
Wow.
So, you know, can we just let the process play out a little bit? I mean, yes, get involved, go ask questions, voice your opinion. God bless you. And I stand with a lot of you on those issues, but let's be adults about it. Can we?
Well,
is that impossible anymore?
And how about leadership steps up and takes a leadership position instead of pandering to whoever is kicking and screaming the loudest that day, because that's what the governor did by saying, we're not going to sell this property. That's what other members of council are doing to allow the behavior in council chambers. That's what they are doing by not stepping up and saying, hey, we're adults. We have conversations. We don't just cater to the kicking and screaming. You know, that's where you get kids in the grocery store, you know, throwing a temper tantrum.
It's interesting just talking about bad behavior and how sort of civil society is just sort of crumbling. I mean, you see it in the actions of people at city council meetings or school boards, on the WNBA, you know, customer service. I mean, it's almost rare now when I get really good customer service. Otherwise, they're just kind of like doing their nails and ignoring you. I mean, everything is just the decline, and you can really see it, especially if you kind of step back and look back. It doesn't have to be this way, but sadly it is in all too many venues.
Yep. And of course, you know, there's a number of things at those grocery store / you know, shopping experiences, because society has gone so far the other way in ordering and the convenience of having it brought to you. But yet we see the challenges with that. And even in that, it's like some of these drivers, I've been run off the road by UPS drivers a couple of times in my lifetime. And I'm kind of going, is this the kind of people that are out now on the roads? I mean, drive down the road and see how uncourteous people are in letting you in or merging or...
I do have a problem with the people that go all the way. They speed past everybody and get right there to the first pylon and then sit there. And I'm kind of like, you know what? No, you can sit there. Merging. every other car. Pretty simple. That seems to be a lost art too.
Well, and if you're on a road that goes from two lanes to one lane, plan ahead rather than sit next to somebody and then get mad because your lane ended and theirs didn't, and they didn't let you like slam on their brakes to let you go. I've seen that one.
Oh, it's all just so just so crummy. It's funny because we're really talking about we used to be a high trust society. We're really a low trust society now, and a lot of people who are like, if they're in blue states, when you go into like a CVS or you go into a drugstore and everything's behind a case, and you have to, you know, you get a tube of toothpaste and you have to have a clerk come and unlock it. Traveling to more higher trust red states where you don't have to do that, it's like culture shock. Wait a minute, what?
Well,
so it's sad. It's sad.
The most recent one to me was laundry detergent.
Locked
behind glass walls, and you had to show ID to get laundry detergent.
What?
Yes.
Is that because the kids were eating the Tide Pods?
Probably. I don't even know, but I'm just kind of going. But that's the other kicker is right here in Oregon, because we have done so much to make, entry-level labor not cost-effective. Now you go into a lot of these stores and it takes forever to even hunt down someone to open up a thing, because everywhere seems to be understaffed simply because you're paying, you know, a learning wage that is so expensive that you can't hire two or three people with that kind of money.
It's not good. It's not good, unfortunately. And, you know, I don't see it getting any better. And so it's frustrating, like, you know, with the WNBA and just the bad behavior all the way around. So I want to talk a little bit about, because we've been talking about flock cameras as well, too. There's a lot of, you know, deflock Idaho, deflock Washington. I don't think there's a deflock Oregon yet, but there will be. A friend of ours, Russ, posted out here, crime has been falling since 1993. Flock safety wasn't founded until 2017, a quarter of century into the decline. Violent crime is down 49%, property crime down 59% before the AI ALPR surveillance existed at all. So basically, you know, we can watch the government First Amendment. The government cannot watch everyone else. That's a Fourth Amendment violation. A lot of people have big concerns about this. You know, everything, it's like, it's for our safety. It's for our convenience. It's all really, you know, you're going to love it. It's great. Mm-hmm. You will own nothing and you'll be happy. A big brother's going to be watching you. I mean, crack open a book, 1984 for starters.
Well, do a little looking, because I believe there's about 50 cases nationwide right now of police officers and other government employees taking advantage of flock cameras illegally track people, whether it's an ex-love or whatever the scenario is. So those are out there, and to sit there and say that's not going to happen, we can prove it is.
So the expansion, the flock, that this is going to help reduce crime. And it doesn't, you know, it was already trending down to begin with. And looking at 12,000 plus clients, 120,000 plus cameras. And just in the last 2 years, and again, you're looking at an infographic here where it's literally tracking, because it's license plate readers, and it can track you. You know, you went to home, you went to the grocery store, you went to the park, you went out and got a cup of coffee. It can follow you all the way around. It can start looking for patterns. It can start doing all this. And the people that are like, well, I don't have anything to hide. I'm not doing anything illegal, until they say you are.
The same people that are tracking you, knowing where you are 24 hours a day, are the same people that can decide that maybe you shouldn't have been doing something you were doing. And it might be a daily routine you don't even recognize. And I just, the frightening part of all of this is, one, it's wide open for doing anything. But two, these red light cameras, I've actually received two tickets from red light cameras, and neither one of them were me driving the car in question.
Oh, and was it even your car?
It was my car. Oh. My name's on it, but it wasn't me driving the car. So I'm kind of going, so this is not only a bad way of doing it, but it's also kind of shoddy police work to not even look at the picture that you're presenting, because it's plainly obvious it's not me.
Long hair, earring. Well, it could be you. Long hair, earrings, and lipstick. You could have been having a day.
Maybe
feeling like a woman.
Maybe I was preparing for the WNBA draft, you know, wearing my wig and, you know, Cutting off some facial hair, I guess.
Yeah, well, you can get makeup. Anyway, it is a big concern. I know you're seeing stuff where people are like sitting in front of them, holding up signs in front of the cameras, and but yeah, the argument that I always get, well, you know, I'm not doing anything illegal. I have nothing to hide. It's so lame. Mm-hmm. Stop it. That's not the point of all of this. This is a direct violation. We have rights. The government has limits. Remember that. Mm-hmm. Remember that.
Oh, but I'm sitting here going, no. More kids are found through, you know, these Amber Alerts than there will ever be found through a Flock camera. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. And if everybody remember this during the Super Bowl, that creepy Ring camera thing about the dog finding a dog, and everybody was like, ack, well, this is that on steroids. So come on.
Well, this is government sponsored. That's what the other part of this is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Let's go ahead and take our last break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Cozy's New York Deli.
Alrighty, yes, like I mentioned, I did get my Cozy's fix. Very, very good. It was delicious. Okay. Wallet Hub. I mean, whatever you want to say about Wallet Hub, they do a lot of these trendy things. And one of their last one here is the best states to live in. Oregon ranked out of 50.
Oh, but wait, no, I got to guess, because Oregon is so beautiful. The natural landscape.
Trust me, the coast,
the mountains, eastern Oregon, the valley.
Beautiful valley.
The weather is so perfect. It's got to be in the top 10, right?
No. Wah, wah, wah. It's 42. 42, and they factor in things like, here's from the analyst over on the site that's listing these things. Quote, when deciding on a place to move, you should consider financial factors like the cost of living, housing prices, and job availability. Many states have strong economies, though, so you should also consider a wide variety of other factors, such as where you live will impact your health and safety, adequate access to activities, if you have children, education system. So Oregon ticks the box on natural beauty.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Oh.
I don't think it ticks any.
Come on, give me the list. There's got to be a list.
Well, they rated, housing costs. They ranked 46th.
Mm-hmm.
For home ownership rate, 43rd. Percent of the population in poverty, 27%, or 27th, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the percentage of adults in fair or poor health, 36th. And then restaurants per capita is 16th. That kind of surprised me, because Portland had always, you know, really been a big foodie scene, a really, really great restaurants coming in, but a lot of them are gone now.
Well, that was where I'd go. I would guess this in 2018, 2019, that positioning was probably much better.
It was.
Unfortunately,
we've seen other.
Well, as we know, what happened with COVID, they shut down the small restaurants for chains. And then, of course, you add in the crime and the homelessness and other deteriorating factors, especially in Portland, but other areas. And, of course, the cost of employing people at a restaurant is getting challenging. Anybody that knows the restaurant business, the margins are extremely tight. So every time they jack up minimum wage, something's got to give.
Yeah. So they rank on affordability, economy, health and education, quality of life. Okay. The top five. One of these really, actually two of them kind of surprised me. Number five, New Hampshire. I basically grew up in New Hampshire. I get it. New Hampshire is beautiful. I love New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Live free or die, baby. Live free or die. Number four, and I spent a week there this summer, Massachusetts. I was on the Cape. Taxachusetts. That's what we always called it.
Mm-hmm.
So that one got an affordability ranking of 44. Number three, Wisconsin. Spent some time in Wisconsin a couple of years ago. Beautiful. Number two surprised me, also having lived there. New Jersey.
Huh.
Most people would not. I just wouldn't put New Jersey at number two.
No, I
sorry, Jersey. I love you, but
well,
man.
I look at some of these metrics, like the home ownership rate. I would suspect a lot of those Eastern Seaboard places have almost a legacy level of ownership rates. And then the poverty part, too. I think that if you're living in one of these major East Coast areas, especially to the Northeast, money's not a daily struggle as much as some other places.
Probably not, especially if you're living in North Jersey. Chances are you work in the city, so you're earning pretty, pretty high wages. I know it even in my family. My grandparents' house is still in the family, and it's just probably going to always be in the family. Number one, No surprise. Maybe. I don't know. Idaho, number one.
What?
What?
Even with all the smoke there?
Yeah. They're thanking Oregon. Thanks, Oregon. Thanks, Washington. It got a total score of 60.15. New Jersey came in at 59.41. It's got a 10 affordability ranking. Idaho is a beautiful state. It's got mountains, lakes, tons of lakes. I mean, it's a beautiful state as well. The other side of that is, though, livability. So that's interesting because Idaho's minimum wage is the federal minimum wage at $7.25. So a lot of people kind of moving over from blue states over are kind of a little bit shell-shocked because the real estate prices are going up, but the wages aren't. So you can't necessarily earn your money in Idaho. You kind of have to be earning it somewhere else to afford it, which is a frustration for a lot of Idahoans.
So the one thing I am not seeing in this is school rankings.
Yeah.
And the education systems because...
Is
it in there? Because I think Oregon's probably way down on that list as well.
Oregon ranked, let me look here, 26. And again, I don't know quite how they're setting all this up. Mm-hmm. It did not rank very well for education. And of course, we all know why, which brings us to our next topic real quick.
Kids.
The superintendent put another video out. She is a hand talker. She went to hand talking school.
Well, of course, last week they announced that up to 8 Salem Kaiser elementary schools will be closing for next year. Simply because of budgetary reasons. And of course, the element of less kids entering the school district, I believe, went from 30,000 in the district to 25 or 30 to 35. But we've lost 5,000 kids in the last couple of years.
Yeah. So probably either to homeschooling, private schools, families just moving and getting out. But she had she was really trying to pin the blame on one thing.
Yeah, people not reproducing at the same rates they once were. And I'm kind of going, yes, that may be
that's
tiny factor.
Part of it?
But I would guess your school policy is probably chasing out a whole lot more kids and families than lack of kids. Let's put it that way.
And they've known about this for a long time. Mm-hmm. That enrollment has been declining for years. So my question is, why are they only now confronting the mismatch between the number of students, building, staffing, spending? She kind of broke down when a school closes, all the resources and everything go with that population. So it's not necessarily saving any money. But it's like, I would kind of want to know what specifically spending per student, what are we spending if enrollment is falling? Is it the same? I don't remember the last numbers I saw. I want to say 12,000 per student.
It's one of the top spending in the country per student.
What are we getting for that money?
Well, we're getting no standards. We're getting decreased reading and writing skills. But we make sure we have social workers that are going to be moving from school to school, you know, with when they close these buildings. And I just sit here and I go, so virtually you're going to close schools, make it a little more inconvenient. I'm not against closing schools.
No.
Especially some of them are getting old buildings and things like that I'm sure are on the chopping block. But to me, if you don't address the true reason people are leaving your school district, you will continue to lose students because the alternatives are better. Homeschooling, private schooling, leaving the area, leaving the state. They're all becoming much more appealing than sending your kids to public school where it's pretty much herding cats with no standards.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't get that sense from the video that I saw that they really are looking at what the real root causes are this. I don't know that they want to do that or it doesn't fit the agenda. And again, with the hand talking, it's distracting.
Well, are people feeling safe in your schools? You've taken out the SROs. Are people feeling like they're a part of their kids' education? No, you don't let parents in the buildings.
Right.
So all of these things, I'm sure, are factoring into your decreasing numbers, and you're unwilling to look in the mirror and say, maybe we need to change.
Yeah. All right, everybody, that's it for us today. Real Estate Insights tomorrow. Be sure to join us then. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.